Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation with Jim Sloan, Director of FinCEN at the U.S. Department of Treasury. And joining us in our conversation is Kent Owens, a PwC consultant.
Jim, President Bush in October 26 signed the USA Patriot Act of 2001 to toughen existing money laundering laws, the Bank Secrecy Act. Can you describe some of the important changes provided in this act and how it might impact FinCEN?
Sure. The Patriot Act has had significant impact on FinCEN, as it has in many parts of the government. The greatest impact has been the recognition in the Patriot Act of FinCEN as a bureau within the Department of the Treasury. Prior to October 26th and the President's signing of the act, FinCEN was an agency of the Department of the Treasury without bureau status. And the reason that it has become important is the taskings, and I'll get into the taskings in a moment, of the Patriot Act. The taskings of the Patriot Act required FinCEN to have the ability to be the masters of its own destiny, if you will. Prior to October 26, FinCEN would have to contract to other agencies for processes as simple as procurement, human resource activity, even EEO and diversity activity for a period of time was contracted out, where the authorities of the other agency were utilized by FinCEN in order to accomplish these activities. So you can imagine having to go through another agency and be queued in their system for hiring, for position descriptions, for background investigations, for adjudication of backgrounds, for simply buying 10 computers really became a problem for FinCEN. And the Patriot Act's elevation of FinCEN to bureau status and the bureau authority pretty much changed that concern overnight. We didn't suddenly get hundreds of more people in order to accomplish this. We still contract our services, but we certainly have the authorities that didn't exist prior to that time. As far as the substance of the act, there are many challenges that came from the act that were placed squarely on the in the lap of FinCEN. For instance, by July, we are required to make available to the financial services industry a highly secure network by which they can e-file their reports under the authority of the Bank Secrecy Act, which would be currency transaction reports, suspicious activity reports, and transmit them, as I say, secure and electronically to FinCEN through our database in the Detroit Computing Center. And additionally, we are to be able to have the ability to then, in return, place alerts and other information back out in a cyber posting to the same industry. Additionally, we are required under the Act to expand some of the regulations of the Bank Secrecy Act. Some we've already been engaged in. Prior to the Act, only depository institutions, for instance, were required to submit suspicious activity reporting, and that's where a bank would know, suspect, or have reason to suspect that the transaction is of a suspicious nature. Since the Act, the Bank Secrecy Act requirements have expanded to the money services business, which are check cashers, money exchangers, currency exchangers, broker-dealers and securities, and ultimately to casinos and other financial service industry providers. So in addition to the regulatory activity, the bureau status activity, the reporting by electronic activity, we have other reports that are required out of the Act, but it's safe to say that the Act has had a very, very significant impact on FinCEN operations.
What are the challenges of dealing with the informal or non-traditional banking institutions like you described, the money exchanging and the money transfer?
Well, you're referring to something that's commonly called hawala. Although I don't speak the language, I am familiar with the fact that hawala in Southwest Asia means trust, essentially means trust. And quite frankly, these are not all illegal operations. There are many people in the world that transmit their money from one jurisdiction to another by virtue of a hawala. But hawala, by definition, or in the definition of some, transferring money without actually moving money. It's based on the fact that I may call you in Chicago, and I'm located in London, and I'll say I would like $5,000 given to a person who will identify themselves with a password or some sort of account number, and then you and I will settle up at a later date without actually transferring money through what would be the traditional wire remittance systems. In the underground or illegal way, the hawalas certainly provide a degree of anonymity to the users. However, the money service business rules that FinCEN issued and took effect for registration purposes on December 31st require anybody to include hawalas to register with the government through FinCEN the fact that they are a wire remitter. And once they've registered, they're bound by the same rules of any wire remitter to issue suspicious activity reports, to report the transmission amounts and the owners of the transmission amounts, and to keep records of those activities with for use by the government in a criminal investigation.
Is that something they can deal with easily? The hawalas? My sense is they like the informality of it, and they wouldn't have the technology.
The technology is for the purposes of registration is essentially going to the FinCEN webpage and downloading the registration form. It's either at www.msb.gov, and the MSB stands for Money Service Business. So it's pretty easy to get the information regarding the registration activity. And I should step back a second and tell you that the entire registration for the money service businesses has been a challenge in its own right. The Money Laundering Suppression Act of 1994 required that the so-called money service business be defined and then be registered for expansion by the Bank Secrecy Act. The money service business is a definition that applies not only to check cashers or hawalas or wire transmitters or money order providers, currency exchangers. The definition actually applies even further to all non-bank financial institutions that are not brokers and dealers in securities or casinos. They might be a 7-Eleven or a mom-and-pop grocery store that transmits money. They all become money service business providers. In fact, there's about 37 or 38,000 U.S. Postal Service facilities around the United States that issue money orders that are all subject to the rules because they provide a money service product. When FinCEN embarked in this process, and I inherited it in 1999, one of the first things that we had to do was to determine how large a universe we were actually dealing with, and before we could start the registration process. And we acquired the services of a public relations firm, and we began to essentially go out and find out the extent of the universe. And it's conservatively estimated to be about 160,000 entities within the United States when you don't even include the Postal Service facilities. Many of the people who are the subject of these rules are operating businesses that in many parts of the country are the principal financial services for that community, the people who don't necessarily use a bank, but they'll use these facilities to wire money and transfer money. There's certain vulnerability relative to money laundering that's inherent in this activity. In fact, we had been able to demonstrate with the Customs Service and the IRS in the past that sometimes people will use these services and exploit them to launder money. But I must also tell you that the vast, vast majority of the people who are registered as money service businesses are tremendously honest people who are simply providing a much-needed service in their community. And we've also had to rely very heavily on their cooperation through the registration process, because many of them don't speak English as their principal language, and they've had little or no impact with the federal government as a regulator in the past, although many of them have been regulated by state bank regulators. The idea that they are now required to do certain things for the federal government is coming as is news to them. But without the cooperation of the industry representatives, and actually the people who work in this environment, we wouldn't have been able to accomplish as much as we've been able to accomplish in less than 2 years since these rules have rolled out.
What is the role of technology in FinCEN carrying out its mission?
As I mentioned earlier, we invest a great deal both in human resources and technical resources at FinCEN in the area of information technology. At FinCEN, we get approximately 12 million currency transaction reports a year. Now, these currency transaction reports are the reports that, banks and other financial institutions that take in $10,000 or more in cash or monetary instrument must report the name and the identifiers of the, of that person who's conducting the transaction. I'll be the first to tell you that many of those reports are probably not of a great deal of use to us, and we have exemption procedures in place to avoid that reporting. But as we go on in a few minutes, I'd like to discuss what we are doing relative to leveraging technology to try to take greater advantage of technology and make sense out of all this reporting.
We must have anticipated we got to stop for a break, so thank you. Rejoin us after the break as we continue our conversation with Jim Sloan of FinCEN. We'll continue our discussion of how technology is used. Find out when the Business of Government Hour continues.